The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Zach Mir, but it's in a different role. Normally he is the CEO of Charting, and now he's in his guise as CEO of Lyft Global Ventures. Zach, welcome on the podcast, fella.
It's a strange feeling to be on the other side of the fence. I've interviewed more people than Graham Norton, and now I'm being interviewed myself.
Yeah, well, you should know what's coming. It's good there. So, let's talk about this. First of all, you are CEO of this company, hoping to list on Aquis. I think it's called a SPAC. First of all, before you're looking at what investments you're looking at, could you explain to people what a SPAC is? Because we've heard this word and this acronym pop up many a time over the last year. Just explain what that means, if you could.
I suppose the simplest way of describing it, it's the investors are blind in terms of what the SPAC will actually invest in. So you're basically raising money off the back of the directors or the board and their track record or their experience. And either you like them or you don't. So for instance, Elon Musk might set up a space travel SPAC or a car SPAC or whatever it is. So it's just basically you have a theme that you're investing, a broad theme normally that you're investing in. And then over the short term, you'll then announce what you've actually done with the money.
Yeah. So a special purpose acquisition company. So what's the advantage then of doing it this way round, rather than sort of like finding a company that you like, investing in it, then reverse takeover kind of thing? What's the difference in that and this? Is it more flexibility or what? What happens there?
There is more flexibility in the sense that it gives the directors the incentive to find the best deal and look around for the best deal once they've raised the money from investors. So I think I like the way this works. That's obviously why we've done it. And the theme of being financial, media and technology, I think, is the right one for this SPAC, in the sense that we are, at least as you probably know, I've been in this sort of financial journalism, financial websites area for 20 years. And probably the most of the companies that people are aware of, I've actually written for. So ADVFN, Vox, Interactive Investor, and many others, Yahoo Finance, all those sorts of companies. So I know the area very well. And I think that's just something actually a bit new, because you tend to have with many CEOs, either they are just sort of professional CEOs and professional directors who go from sector to sector. So they've got great stock market experience. Or they are people who are just oil and gas people or mining people, and they don't have that experience. I think with Lyft, we have the best of both worlds, that we have, let's say, myself experienced in this particular area that we both work in, and then the directors who've got experience on the stock market. So I think it's quite a rounded team of three, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. And so what's the order of things here? So you raise the money and you list then, and then you're looking for things, or are you already assume looking at things? Are you beforehand and just not just tentatively?
Well, it's all hush-hush, but I mean, obviously there's an idea of the kind of targets that we would like to acquire, what we would do with them, and also how we would extract value from them as well. Mm-hmm. I think it's a simple example. Obviously, the Interactive Investor started off 20 years ago just as a financial website with a bit of news on it and articles, and then they added a trading capability and they added all sorts of other bits and bobs, and hence you got a $1.5 billion company. In terms of what could happen now, maybe if you look at our sort of space, there are a lot of PR companies which have been around a long time. They used to get you in the paper and check your RNSs and do whatever they did. But many of them don't actually now have a social media capability. So, for instance, you might combine a PR company with a website which is or a platform which is very good on social media. So that would give the clients of that PR company a much more rounded sort of visibility in the market. So that kind of thing. So basically using the pieces of the jigsaw in our space and trying to put them together in a decent way.
Yeah. What's it been like so far? I mean, doing the rounds there, are you getting a warm reception, Zach?
Yeah, no, I think obviously I have the sort of the platform through Twitter and other places. I think we got in the paper a month ago as well, so that was great. One of our sort of founding shareholders was Adrian Beeston, who who put in money at that stage at the seed round. He was one of the founders of Argo Blockchain, and obviously that became a £1 billion market cap company. And it's, you know, it's great to have people like him on board. Mm. I've got other people who are basically sort of city people and investment specialists. So it's that seed round was quite flattering in the sense that we didn't really push it. And the interest was there from the professional market participants, as much, you know, and also, you know, professional investors, and that was quite a nice feeling. So on the IPO, would expect the same kind of thing, but obviously it'd be nice to have some of the people who followed me over the years to get involved too.
Yeah. So it is interesting. I agree with you. It's funny how PR companies, you know, the traditional PR companies, still around, and they still have lots of clients. And like I say, what's missing from their armory, their arsenal, is a social media presence. And now there's no bigger marketing channel outlet than social media, is there? So you think, you know, they need that sort of leverage, I suppose, to get sort of things. So you're looking in that kind of area, sort of fintech and PR and all that stuff, and yeah. And anything else? Do they have to be, you know, sort of profitable or revenue generating, or they're pre-revenue or what?
I think I'm glad you asked me that. Quite a few points there. What we see on the stock market with let's say, the small investment companies at the moment is that to my mind, they tend to have too many investments, a dozen or more, and they're too small. They put in 50 grand or 100 grand, and even if it became the next Facebook, it would take too long, and they would have to do really well in order to, you know, get, you know, to make a million or 2 million out of it, a meaningful amount. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the scattergun approach is a mistake.
Yeah,
I think the other thing is all these tech companies who just get on the bandwagon of whatever is cool at the moment. So it's NFTs one day, it's AI the next day, it's the metaverse the next day. I mean, you know, if I was a sort of a carpetbagger in that way, I would have, you know, the lift would be metaverse PLC, because that's the cool thing at the
moment. Yeah.
I don't want to go down that road. I want people to sort of understand what they're investing in. They understand that I know the space. That's a big tick. A lot of investors in tech, they don't even know what they're investing in.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, a big problem, especially when it goes right. It doesn't matter if it goes wrong. That's not a good situation. And I think to answer your point about revenue, I think that is very important. These things can take a while to, you know, rejig these investments, these targets. And in the meantime, if that target is already producing revenue, I think that allows Lyft to be sort of ticking over and not asking people for cash all the time to follow, you know, to follow up on the investment, et cetera. So I think that's a very important point. So two or three investments, let's say at the most, and understandable investments, understandable strategy. Which, although sounds bizarre, I think that is, as I said, very, very important. And also, hopefully, the time frame is going to be relatively short, in the sense that if you put, you know, two businesses with synergy, you know, the economies of scale, and then the extra revenue source can actually give you quite a quick turnaround in terms of the business.
Yeah. No, do you know what? I like that thought. One of the reasons I tend to stay clear of investment companies is they're over diversified, you know, and I completely agree with you. I've even seen investment companies invest in investment companies, and they've got like 10% of that investment company. You're not getting any exposure to the underlying business there that you want to invest in. So I always say to people, if you can get access, if it's a company that's been invested in by an investment company and it's listed, invest directly. Don't go via, you know, an investment company. Because if you dedicate 10% of your portfolio to that investment company and they have like 3%, of the company you want to invest in, you're not getting anything from that. You're not getting any exposure. So I like the way you're focusing this. And that scattergun approach destroys. Because an investment company is only as good as the most average investment return, you know. So some will go badly, some will do very well. But the average there is what you're getting. And your exposure to that investment company may be only 10% of your portfolio. So it's a very inefficient way of investing. So I like the fact you're, you know, sector focused and you're not having too many holdings there. And so timeline-wise, you're saying there quite quickly, within 12 months, you're saying?
Well, I think, you know, I think if you put, let's say you put, again, giving you just an example, you have a financial website and you give it a trading capability, you know, how long does that take? You know, that that, you know, and if it's got a good social media presence, it should then be transformed into a decent business, a much better, you know, the, like the interactive idea. And I think that was a, you know, it was a good, it was actually a very good thing to happen, because I think it's one of those things that's much easier to explain with something which is a live example. I think the final thing to say is, apart from your point about investment companies always being judged on their worst investment rather than their best in the market, the other glowing or sort of obvious thing about the UK tech scene is that it's so underrated versus the US. So I think the ideal scenario is that you can buy, you buy something at a UK valuation, and then you try and sell it on at a US valuation. So something which has an international presence, I think, would be very much appreciated. And, you know, it's the same thing, you know, all over the world in terms of a financial website or whatever it turns out to be. So that's an international business which you can buy at a UK price and sell on at a US valuation, I think, would be the ultimate goal, which is, you know, US is 10, you can add a zero always to, you know, well, normally to any decent tech target.
Yeah, yeah. Having said that, it has to be sort of viable. You know, there's a certain, I don't want to mention the business, but a certain business who've gone to the US recently. And I think, well, if it's a bad business model, it's a bad business model wherever you list it, you know? And so it's got to be viable, isn't it? You know? And thing of the startups, I mean, like I said, in my mind, if you get in early, of course, you can do multiples and multiples if it goes well. Sometimes it's on hype alone, but sometimes it will just pop and drop. If it can't, you know, show that it's viable in any way, but and I see that as, you know, some way having some kind of revenue growth at the end when they start to generate revenue. If it doesn't, if you've got no revenue growth, you can see, well, why isn't it working then? Because it's, you can have a hot idea, can't you? It doesn't mean it translates into a good business, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think the other thing about our area is that it's, you know, as I said, it's 20 years old with the online digital side, and it's not sort of something which has just turned up like NFTs have. And so I think the metrics and the valuations and all that sort of aspect, they're quite, you know, they're quite sort of set in stone now. So on that basis, hopefully you don't overpay, you have a chance of underpaying, and you have a chance of, you know, developing and doing things in a meaningful way.
Yeah, cool stuff. So when are you hoping to list, ballpark?
Hopefully we raise the money. It would be, I think, hopefully a couple of weeks from now, something like that. Obviously, it depends a bit on the Christmas, you know, coming into it as well. But at the moment, it's sort of the next, maybe the week after next, something like that would be the ideal time to list.
Marvellous stuff. And I guess it'll always look good in the chart, Zach, won't it?
Yes, we'll have to give it a few weeks maybe to get a meaningful data, but that should be fun. I'm not sure whether I'll be charting my own stock, but somebody suggested I interview myself as well. So charting stock and interviewing myself, that might
be good. You can say, well, the chart of Lyft is looking very good, actually, as it did yesterday and the day before. It's looking even better now. Marvellous stuff. And Zach, you know, when it lists, come back on and we can talk a bit more maybe. But until then, thanks very much, fella. Speak soon.
Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.